Aaron, it's January 26th. Why are you talking about fighting fires and wildfires? Well, first off, we had a nasty fire in early December. You remember that one? In fact, they just had a big fundraiser for our friends in Denton, Montana, over this past weekend. But second off, if I wait to talk about how we could be better prepared for fighting fires and we save that conversation till next August, you're going to say, well, Aaron, why are we talking about this now? Why didn't we talk about this 6 months ago so that we were better prepared, so that when we're in the fight, we can focus on fighting the fight and fighting the fire instead of how we could have done it better? So that's why we need to have these types of conversations right now. Great to have back on the show with us here, Tim Sheehy. Tim Sheehy is the CEO of Bridger Aerospace and also a Navy SEAL. And thanks again for your service. Tim Sheehy, great to have you in studio with us here this morning.
Thanks, Aaron. Always great to be here.
Yeah, good to see you. Yeah, went Naval Academy graduate and a Navy SEAL, and you moved to Montana. And I think, what was it, in 2014 when I first met you, you and your wife started this little company called Bridger Aerospace. I think you were still living in a room above your garage. That was your house at the time. And man, your company has taken off, literally and figuratively, very successful in the Bozeman area. How would you describe how big Bridger Aerospace is now?
Well, yeah, thanks for the history there. But yeah, we started in November 2014, and I used to come out here and train in the mountains before we'd go to Afghanistan, which is kind of how I discovered, you know, for me at least, the Bozeman and Montana region. We started in 2014, two of us in one plane, and now between Bridger and our technology company, Ascent Vision, we're about 300 folks. Still growing fast, 25 airframes and more on the way. So
yeah, wow. And I was talking with the CEO of Billings Clinic yesterday, and he says they've got some of their air assets that they co-locate at your hangars in the mm-hmm. Bozeman area to support their air medevac operations and things like that as well. You're also the co-owner of Little Belt Cattle Company. We got to see you and one of your fellow Navy SEALs down at the National Finals Rodeo and Cowboy Christmas last month. Well, I know you wrote up a guest opinion column that a lot of very influential folks in Montana were sharing around. You mentioned your airframes. A lot of what your pilots do, as I understand, they help fight fires, not just here in Montana, but really all across the country. So as a result, you're able to see kind of what works and what doesn't work. And you're able to do a little bit of an after action review on firefighting, just like you would have done when you were a Navy SEAL after a mission. What do you think? What do you think we can do better, or what's the problem set right now, would you say?
The frustrating part of this is the problem is so widespread, and it comes down to a problem of preparedness and mindset. We've always had, across the U.S., this isn't Montana specific, a mindset that we're going to be incremental in our treatment of wildfire issues. We're going to let the fire start, we're going to watch it, evaluate it, then we'll think about fighting it after it started. And our allocation of resources nationally is always very reactive and very defensive in nature. And the fact is, the threat has gotten far worse in the last 20 years. Again, Denton burning in December. 1,000 homes in Denver burned in January. Big Sur is burning as we speak. It's not a fire season anymore. It's a fire year. And it's not a regional issue for a couple small parts of the West. It's becoming anything west in the Mississippi is really open game year-round. So we have to change our mindset from a defensive reactive infrastructure piece to proactive and aggressive initial attack and be ready year round to respond to these incidents. And that, for what Montana, how does that apply to us? We have more firefighting hardware in our state than any other state in the country. Billings Flying Service, Neptune Air Tanker, Bridger, Central Helicopters, Andy Taylor up in Fort Bend. You got a lot of people with a lot of aircraft here. The problem is all those aircraft leave the state. They're in Arizona, California, Alaska. And then when we start burning, no one's left. And there's no aircraft available to fight fires in our state when they hit here. And Governor Gianforte, being a businessman, being a guy that wants to solve problems, has come to several of us, and me in particular, last year and said, listen, what can we do as a state to be ready to do this better? And the DNRC has been great so far. Amanda Castor, who's the director there, and I have been talking on and off about how we as a state can change our posture to be ready to quickly respond to a fire incident, not 2 days later or 3 days later like Red Lodge, but immediately.
Yeah, and so so the point that you're making about, okay, here we have all these incredible, you know, companies here, all this aircraft that's based here, yet when we need them the most, they're elsewhere. That's not a knock on those companies. That's just what that point is that, hey, once these planes get contracted to go fight the fire, they get contracted to go fight that fire. And I know talking with you before, sounds like one of the ideas that you have, if I recall right, is, well, what the state of Montana could do better, for example, to give a concrete example, is contract these aircraft ahead of time. We know we're going to get a fire season. We know it's going to really heat up typically in August, sometimes even earlier. So I guess talk about what we could do to better prepare for this summer, for example.
You got to start now. Like you said, having this conversation in August doesn't do anybody any good. And what a lot of people don't realize, when you're looking at a wildfire and you see those aircraft over the fire, they're not government aircraft. They're not government pilots. They're not government owned. It's all private contracted capability. And the U.S. has about 28 to 30 large fixed wing firefighting aircraft. Canada has about 90. Europe has about 100. So for similar size geographies, we are under-resourced nationally for wildfires. And what does that mean? That means as the fires burn, there are not enough planes for the amount of fires that we're fighting. There could be 2,000 fires burning at once in the summer, in active incidents. So when you look at those number of incidents and this relatively small number of aircraft that are available, they get soaked up pretty quick. So what's happening now is localities, even counties and states, are saying, you know what, we're not going to depend on a national system to organize our aircraft. We're gonna contract aircraft ourselves so we know our citizens are covered. State of Washington is doing that. California does that. And now I think Montana is going to start saying, all right, we need to make sure that there's always aircraft within the state of Montana ready to protect our citizens.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, too, because it's not too often that in Montana we would say, hey, here's something that Washington and California are doing better. But, hey, we got to be able to have these open conversations to say, hey, California may not be doing everything right, but here might be one thing that they are doing that we could look at doing here. It just makes sense overall, the point that you're making, too, because I remember when COVID-19 first started kicking off, and there was a state official, I think he was with the on the federal side of the house, and he said, well, because of COVID-19, we're going to have to fight these fires earlier because we won't be able to have these big, you know, fire camps. And it's like, well, we should be doing that anyway, and I don't think he would disagree, but so it just simply makes sense. But even if we are going to attack it earlier, you still got to have the aircraft available.
Yep. And another piece of this that isn't necessarily directly related to air, but it certainly impacts that, is the labor crisis isn't, the government's not immune from the labor crisis. There are not enough ground firefighters. They don't get paid enough, and there's not enough of them available to really have a fully staffed ground firefighting capability for wildfires. So that means it's going to take longer for us to get hotshot crews and smoke jumper crews and type one teams in place to manage these incidents. It could be days before they get a type one management team onto a fire. They may have to come from Arizona or New Mexico. And in that lag time, we may not have a ground element big enough to effectively contain an incident, which means air is our only option. And if our air is gone too, we're kind of naked. And I think Lewistown in October is a good example of that. I was loading calves at our ranch in Martinsdale and looked over the hill and saw the pyrocumulus cloud coming up over the mountains. Called Ryan Osmondson because his ranch is right over that hill. And found out that, you know, this fire went from starting to 7,000 acres in a day.
Tim Sheehy, the CEO of Bridger Aerospace, very successful aviation and aerospace company in the Gallatin Valley. He started it just a few years ago after leaving service as a United States Navy SEAL and settling here in Montana. Kind of funny, though, you ended up actually spending more of your time with the Army Rangers, even though you were a Navy SEAL, as I understand it, during your time, huh?
Yeah, you know, the Special Operations Task Forces overseas were very joint in nature. So when you actually looked at the amount of time I was working with the Rangers or with USASOC units or SF or working under a task force, I was working for an Army officer most of the time. So.
Did I hear you right? Do I remember this right? Did you say Army Ranger School was tougher than SEAL Buds? Or I can't remember. What was it?
That's normally how the Army guys hear it come out of my mouth. But believe what you want.
All right. Well, I really like this concept of, yeah, why do we wait until the fire breaks out to then, like, start calling people, hey, we got a fire. Can you come here? Dude, we're already booked. We're in Arizona or we're in Washington or we're over here. We know we're going to have a fire season pretty much every year. It's just a question of how big. So I was talking with you during the break. As you understand it here, this wouldn't even require a legislative fix we could start doing this year, this fire season.
Yeah, we could. I mean, long term, you know, I know Director Castor and others understand that, you know, to structurally change the state's posture on wildfire will likely require some legislative action. But in the meantime, there are, you know, emergency funds available. The state already has the authority to contract aircraft to be available for wildfire incidents. So, you know, to immediately take action on this wouldn't require, you know, a legislative session or a special session of any kind. It's something the state can do and is working on now, to their credit. They're fully aware of it. Additionally, you know, you mentioned fire season. I think one thing we've been reminded of this year is we're losing the fire season. That the federal firefighting infrastructure generally, they start the fire bases and hire all the people in April, May, and then they kind of shut them down in October. Well, what happens when there's a fire in December, like Denton, or January, like Denver, or right now in Big Sur, California? So a year-round posture is going to likely fall to the states to fill that in, because the federal government just doesn't necessarily move that fast. They're not going to adapt that quickly, especially with Congress being in the state it is now of deadlock. There's not going to be dramatic changes in the federal level quickly. That's just not the way the federal government works. So the states are going to have to start stepping in and saying, listen, our citizens are vulnerable year-round, so we're going to take it on us to ensure that we're ready to respond to those needs. Additionally, there's always the cost piece that, man, this is expensive. Aerial firefighting aircraft are expensive. It's a $30 million aircraft. This could cost us $100,000 a day to fight this fire. But a dollar spent in prevention is about $10 in recovery.
Well, yeah. And likewise, imagine on the counter side what it would cost if the state government or the feds wanted to build up their own fleet of these type of aircraft. Yeah, $30 million. Okay, well, I think the emergency budget for the wildfire fund in Montana alone is $25 million. Okay, you got one plane.
Yeah.
All right. Versus you could take a chunk of that money that you already dedicate and block off as reserve funds, emergency funds, and instead dedicate that to now reserving aircraft ahead of time so that you know you have that capability already on hand for when the plume goes up.
Exactly.
So what would that cost be, would you say?
I mean, I think for the state to take a position that they want a pre-position aircraft that will be available for Montana specifically, you know, it would be probably $10 to $20 million a year. It could go up to 30, depending on how much they want to go into it. But a lot of that will be offset, because after a fire incident, there's cost sharing with the federal government. So it really ends up being more of kind of line of credit that gets reimbursed after the fact. So it's not a tremendous cost impact. It's really just a decision to be made that we're going to be ready to protect Montana. We're not going to wait on a federal infrastructure response.
We got to get you back here for the full hour here one of these days as well, because I'm seeing we've already only got a couple of minutes left as we talk with Tim Sheehy, the CEO of Bridger Aerospace. Glenda in Kalispell, did you have a quick question or comment?
I had thought that the condition of our forests was because of suppression of all the forest fires. And now I hear that the plan may be to be faster about suppressing them. How are we going to get rid of the beetle-killed forests and the fuel on the ground that is creating these mega firestorms?
All right. So is that part of the problem? Now, I know my logger friends and others would say, well, actually, we need to log the beetle kill instead of wait for it to burn. But your thoughts, Tim Sheehy.
No, I don't remember her name, but she's 100% correct. I mean, the wildfires are a multifaceted issue that, unfortunately, they're a cross-section across so many political issues, from climate change to wildland interface to real estate development to beetle kill to logging. And, you know, any effective strategy to address this is going to require an approach from all angles. Initial attack aviation to protect our communities at risk is number one. This strategy, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people's opinion, isn't supposed to be used for a wildland fire in the wilderness. If the Bob Marshall's burning, we're not going to smother it in initial attack. If the Gallatin National Forest 50 miles in away from Bozeman is burning, we're not going to go after it. What this is really strategy is meant for is,
unless the call is made from the Fed side to do so.
But,
yeah.
You know, this is really for the Denton type of fire. We got a community that literally you have a fire line marching towards a town that's going to wipe it out. Red Lodge, Deep Creek Canyon fire near Helena, Lewistown fire. So those fires that are threatening the wildland urban interface demand immediate suppression. As far as the beetle kill and the fuel load in the forest, actually the Forest Service just announced about a $50 billion plan over the next 10 years to start clearing out those forests aggressively instead of letting them build up.